Chapter 30. A Song at the Quick Blade Inn. "So, where are we going, Jen?" Volney asked. Jen waited for him and Jerrand to ready themselves to head into town. It was the afternoon of sixth day, and Jerrand and Volney had time free from their masters. As usual, the Dark Guard worked the apprentices doubly hard in the morning, and neither Jerrand nor Volney seemed overly enthusiastic about heading back out into the snowy, cold afternoon. But Jen, who had slept during the morning, invited them to accompany him on an errand laid on him by Shatan. "We are to go to the smithy on Chadsbury Street," Jen answered, as Volney retrieved Jerrand's cloak and handed it to him before getting his own. "As a reward for my distinguished service to the Shalane, Shatan has commissioned a fine set of armour to be crafted for me. The smith, Morgan, I believe, is to take measurements this morning, so he can finish it before the trip to the Shroud Lake portal and Eldaluri Mora." "Is it true that Shatan disowned his concubines and sent them home?" Jerrand asked. "Yes," Jen answered. "He announced his decision just a week ago to the Shalane and the First Mother." "Was the Shalane happy?"
"I would imagine so."
"It is difficult to say what she feels," Jen lied, hiding what he knew out of respect for the Shalane. Mirel had informed her daughter of Kaimas's interference, and the Shalane viewed Shatan's sudden concessions with a cynical eye.
"I was surprised when Dacen returned to the Dark Guard," Volney added, opening the door to their room and leading the way into the hall. "It would seem an honour to be in the Haulrik's service, even in the light of the difficulties. Shatan does appear to be mending his ways a bit, though, which my father says is of great comfort to the aristocracy and officers alike. Who would have thought that he would stand and actually praise you, the one who defied him?"
Jen said nothing, and Jerrand noticed his peculiar lack of response to Volney's comment.
"You see his changes as disingenuous?" Jerrand prodded.
"To be diplomatic to my new benefactor, I will say only that I find it highly coincidental that Shatan's behaviour changed with the arrival of his advisor Kaimas."
They walked out of the barracks into a grey afternoon. Low, dark clouds dropped large, heavy flakes on the ground. The snow had started only a few hours before, but it had already covered everything in a fluffy blanket of white. There was no wind, and Jen speculated that the storm would linger throughout the day. The fresh snow improved the city, covering the dirty sludge churned up from the snow that had fallen 3 weeks ago. The weather meant fewer people on the streets, and the soft covering muffled the harsh edges of city's usual din. Jen judged that a snowstorm might be the best time to venture into streets he usually found unpleasant, noisy, and crowded.
"Is this your first time outside the castle walls since you challenged Shatan?" Jerrand asked, coming to a sudden realization.
"Yes," Jen replied. "Then bury your face in that cowl. We'll do the same."
"You fear I'm still in danger?" Jen asked. "I was under the impression that the whole situation had settled down given recent events."
Jerrand laughed wryly.
"Danger?"
he said, signalling to the guards at the gate before lifting his cowl over his head.
"Not from assassins, friend. From a mob."
"Really?
Tell him, Volney."
"Well," Volney explained, "it goes something like this. Jerrand and I go into town every sixth day to relax, take in some entertainment, and in general enjoy ourselves after getting unfairly beaten about by our masters. What do we end up doing instead? Answering questions about you and telling every young woman in the whole of Mickmere that, no, we won't deliver a letter to Lord Blackshear. I swear, if we would have brought even half back to you, you would find you had little time to do anything else but read them. We almost stopped going into town because of it. They have provided us with a great deal of tinder to start the fire with, for which we thank you."
"I had no idea I was such a celebrity," Jen remarked.
"Oh, please," Volney retorted disgustedly. "You can't be that isolated. Surely you get news of what goes on in the city."
"A little," Jen said, "but I don't seem to recall that a few amorous young ladies were important enough news to concern anyone in the castle."
"If you say so," Volney said incredulously.
"Well, if you are in need of some entertainment, then we'll see to it that you get some today.
Some of the letters are absolutely scandalous. Jerrand actually blushed."
"You read them?" Jen exclaimed. "I thought you said you refused to accept the letters, or burned them."
"I only read a few," Volney stammered.
"And that was only because
I had nothing to do with it,"
Jerrand said, obviously embarrassed.
He insisted on reading them aloud to me, despite my objections. I would never...
Calm down, Jen soothed. I don't blame you for anything. I doubt there was much to get excited about anyway.
I hope so, Jaren said, because a stack of them went missing a few days ago. We suspect Kimdan has them.
And if Kimdan has them, Volney interjected before Jen could comment, then the Lady Fairdale will know about them as well, Jaren finished.
I'm not worried, Jen shrugged. I can hardly feel responsible for letters I have not seen or answered from women I do not know, who are writing to me without any solicitation on my part.
But you can be sure, Jaren added, that Kimdan will cast them in the worst possible light.
Is he very public then about his affections for Fenner?
Yes, Jaren answered. I don't know how close you and Miss Fairdale are, but to hear him tell it in the Commons, he feels he has nothing to worry about.
Jen smiled to himself and let the subject drop. The snow fell more quickly now, smaller flakes dropping faster and more thickly. They stopped several times to ask for directions to Chadsbury Street, Gerund insisting on doing the talking to keep Jen's identity a secret for as long as possible. Fortunately, Chadsbury Street was a scant mile away and situated against the King's Blood Lake. As they approached the smithy, the rhythmic banging of hammer and anvil rang out sharply over the frozen water, where children laughed and played on the ice. The three young men spied a roughly carved sign of an anvil hanging on a fence gate and opened it, working their way around to the back of the modest one-story home made of white plaster and wood. There they found the smith. Morgan was a monster of a man, blue-eyed with black hair just starting to grey at the temples. The forge was in a large room behind the house, and unlike most smithies, Morgan's room was not littered with broken ploughs, spades, and pots. Pieces of armour and weapons of all types were stacked or leaned against corners. As they entered, he looked up from a conical helm he had been reshaping. Jen lowered his cowl, his companions following suit.
"Lord Blackshear," he said, bowing, "I am Morgan the Smith. I welcome you to my humble home."
"Thank you," Jen said. "Please stand and be at ease. I have been a commoner my whole life and am not accustomed to being bowed to. I should introduce Gerund Kildan and Volney Tarun, apprentices to the Dark Guard."
"Welcome all," Morgan said. "I want you to know that I followed the First Mother's instructions and told no one you were coming."
"The First Mother sent instructions?" Jen inquired, curious.
"She did, my lord," Morgan answered. "She feared you would be mobbed if I told anyone you were to visit me, though I would like to introduce you to my boy, if you would allow it."
"Of course," Jen said. "You wouldn't happen to have any daughters, would you?" Volney asked. Gerund elbowed him hard in the ribs. Morgan's face scrunched in confusion.
"No," he answered. "It's just me and my boy here. His ma died birthing him, but I'll fetch him after we're done so we won't be interrupted."
For the next hour, Morgan grilled Jen about the style of armor he wanted, taking notes on a fresh piece of parchment. Jen was impressed. Most smiths in Tolnor could not read, much less write. After Jen described the designs he wanted on his breastplate, arm greaves, and leg greaves, he had to argue passionately for several minutes for Morgan to accept that he did not want a helmet of any sort, as it would interfere with his vision and hearing. Volney and Gerund poked around the shop while Morgan measured and scribbled. They commented on several items, speculating as to how the damage to the items had been done.
"This was obviously done with a blunt lance," Volney said, after examining a deeply dented breastplate. Morgan stopped writing for a moment.
"Actually," he corrected, "General Harband was thrown by his horse, and he landed chest first on a fence post."
"Old hard man Harband?" Volney laughed. "Oh, I wish I could have seen that."
"Killed the horse directly after, I hear,"
Morgan added, turning back to Jen. Volney laughed again.
"No doubt. And for you foreigners," Volney explained, "General Harband is as brutal and coarse a person you'll ever find in our refined nation. He's grumpy and ugly and wiry, and has this scraggly white beard and these sunken beady eyes that make him look like he's 100 years old. My father threatened to send me to train with him if I ever did something bad. Terrible, terrible stories about that man."
"Surely he can't be all that bad," Jaren said. "Regent Ogbith would dismiss him if he were so uncouth and wild."
"I'm sure the regent would love to dismiss him, but is too scared to do it," Volney argued. "When Harband was just a lowly captain,
They say his knight captain threatened to court-martial him for some reason. Harband gets mad, and that night he walks 4 miles to town, gets some thread and a needle from a tent maker, and sews the knight captain inside his tent while he's sleeping.
That doesn't sound so bad, Jen said,
arms outstretched as Morgan measured from his armpit to his elbow. The name Harband was vaguely familiar, but he couldn't remember where he'd heard it. Then he set the tent on fire, Volney added.
And not only that, Morgan continued, before he sewed the tent shut, he threw in a canvas sack full of squirrels, badgers and the like.
Really? Volney said. I hadn't heard that little detail.
That's ridiculous, Jaren said. They would have dismissed him for such an act, even in Rugoth.
Ah, Volney returned, finger pointing in the air. They could not prove that he did it, and he would not confess.
Seems it would be easy to prove it was him, Jaren said. He went into town, and catching badgers and squirrels is dicey, noisy business.
How would you know anything about catching badgers and squirrels, Prince of Tolnor? Volney countered. Gerund and Volney spent the rest of the time arguing the merits and fallacies of the fantastic story, Morgan interjecting from time to time with other exploits that proved that General Harband was capable of other gross forms of malice. Jen listened, amused, thinking the material perfect for a little barding, if he were ever to have the chance of it again.
That is all I can do today, Morgan said, stowing his materials. I'll need you to come back from time to time during the next few weeks to do additional fittings and adjustments. Your project is highest priority, though I'll need to repair the General's breastplate quickly, lest he become angry with me.
I can certainly understand that, Jen said.
Let me fetch my boy, if you'll permit. He's only 14 and watched you at the trials. I dare say he's imitated you a great deal in this very shoproom. Scares me to death.
Jen smiled and nodded his assent, and Morgan jogged to the edge of the lake and shouted for his son, Emery. Jen watched them return. Emery, while not as bulky as his father, was still muscular and tall, even at 14. By his movement, Jen surmised that he was agile. The boy smiled affectionately at his father as they approached the smithy. Jen couldn't help but size Emery up as an excellent candidate for a fighter, as long as further growth didn't ruin his quickness and balance.
Emery, Morgan said as they entered the shop, these are Gerund Kildan and Volney Tarun, apprentices to the Dark Guard. This is Lord Blackshire, protector of the Holy Shalane.
Emery's mouth dropped, and he stood rooted in the doorway. Gerund and Volney grinned widely. Jen stepped forward and offered his hand. Emery took it and shook it, still stunned.
Lord Blackshire, he exclaimed. Well, I should bow, right, Pa?
Don't bother, Jen interjected quickly. We're all friends here. Your father says you watched me at the trials.
Yes, sir,
he exclaimed, eyes brightening with a memory.
It was the best thing I've seen in my whole life. You were so fast. I ain't never seen anyone so fast.
I'm glad I could entertain a little, at least. Here, Jen removed the dagger from his boot and handed it to him. It was thin and finely crafted, a silver rose etched into the ebony blade. Find me in 2 years, and if you can throw the dagger and hit a target at 20 paces, I'll teach you a little of the blade. Emery took the dagger reverentially. Morgan smiled and thanked Jen for the gift, as Emery was too engrossed in examining it to respond.
Oh, thank you,
Emery said, after a helpful nudge from his father. You are most welcome.
We had best be going. Just send word to the castle when you need me again. Good day.
Cowls up, Jen and his companions walked quickly back into the street. As they turned onto the road, they could faintly hear Emery yelling excitedly to his friends on the frozen lake.
You are irritatingly good with people, Volney commented, no matter what everyone says about your personality. I would have never thought to do that for his son. He has just become the most popular of all the boys on the street. Are you serious about taking him on as an apprentice after the prophecy is fulfilled?
Yes, he is built for it, as long as he doesn't lose his agility.
He could still be trained to good effect, even so.
The snow had persisted during their visit and showed no signs of abating. Jen turned to go back toward the castle, but Gerund brought him up short.
You aren't on watch for another 4 hours, correct?
Gerund asked.
Yes, why?
Volney grabbed his arm and steered him in a different direction.
Then, for your inaugural trip into town, we shall introduce you to a wonderful establishment called the Quick Blade.
Is that really a good idea?
Jen asked.
You warned me of being mobbed, and protectors are not allowed to drink.
The Quick Blade is close to the castle, and gets its name from the number of castle guard and dark guard who frequent it, Gerund explained, so you won't be so put upon there as you would be elsewhere. Jaren is there often, and you don't have to drink anything but water if you don't want to. Jaren doesn't seem to mind a little ale now and then, though. Come on, you need to relax a bit. Besides, Volney has someone special there he likes to see whenever he gets the chance of it.
Shut up, Gerund,
Volney growled darkly. It doesn't sound like he's very excited about it, Jen returned. Volney studiously ignored them both. As it turns out, Jaren said, there is a certain innkeeper's daughter who, unlike the rest of the young ladies in the city, is completely unimpressed with apprentices to the Dark Guard. This annoys him greatly, especially as he is smitten by her. Jen smiled. What about you, Gerund? He asked. I imagine a handsome princeling from Tolnor would have his pick of the ladies. Gerund's countenance immediately fell. I was promised to be married to Elia Mukor, and I still hope to be able to some day. Elia was the younger sister of the Queen of Tolnor, and was reputedly very beautiful. The war and Gerund's apprenticeship to the Dark Guard had thrown his hopes and his parents' plans into some difficulty. Jen sympathized with him, and he wondered if Torbrand's daughter Mina had heard that the man she hoped her father would win for her had won a place as an apprentice to the Dark Guard. The Quick Blade was a clean, bright, two-story establishment constructed of light-colored stones and mortar. It sat just south of the castle walls, puffing smoke from four of its eight chimneys. As it stood at the termination of a steeply ascending street, it possessed a church-like quality. Friendly lights beckoned to them through clean window panes on a mid-afternoon turned mid-evening by glowering clouds. By the way, gentlemen, Jen said offhandedly to his two dispirited companions, we have been followed all afternoon. Do not look. He followed us out of the castle and is behind us about 40 paces. They went inside quickly, and a boy waited just inside to take their cloaks. As soon as he saw Jen's face, he grabbed the cloaks and ran into the common room, shouting that Lord Blackshear had come. Volney rolled his eyes and Gerund shook his head. Might as well get this over with, Volney sighed, ushering Jen forward. Jen stepped inside slowly, not quite sure what to expect. The bard stopped playing, all talk died, and every eye turned toward the entryway. An impossibly thin man ran out of a door in the back, wiping his hands on a heavily stained apron.
Lord Blackshear, he said grandly, welcome to the Quick Blade. We had so hoped you would come one day, and, well, here you are. I am Innkeeper Cedric, and I am at your personal service.
Jen was about to reply his thanks when the bard started playing a song. Everyone joined in the tune, and Jen guessed that all the servants and cooks in the establishment were abandoning their posts to rush into the common room and join in the impromptu choir. Here's to the man of great renown, who when Shertan sailed into town and tried to have his sweet Shalane, served him up a plate of shame. Jen, Jen, the dead-faced man, voice of thunder, sword in hand, Shatan's a king, or so they say, but Jen's the one who gets his way. Jen defied the demon trance, Shertan turned pale and wet his pants. Jen fought and bled and nearly died, Shertan fell on the floor and cried. Jen, Jen, the dead-faced man, eyes of stone, sword in hand, Shatan's a king, or so they say, but Jen's the one who gets his way. Shertan can play and hold his beer, but cannot stomach demon fear. The Shalane's Shertan's, as is his right, but who stays with her every night? Jen, Jen, the dead-faced man, nerve of iron, sword in hand. Shertan's a king, or so they say, but Jen's the one who gets his way. Shertan is grand when times are fun, but come a fight, then Jen's the one. They add a verse every couple of weeks or so, Gerund commented, as the song ended in clapping and cheering. Jen waved to everyone and took a seat at a table near the fire. To his chagrin, he noticed several people leaving quickly, and had no doubt that the Quick Blade's patronage was about to double. He tried to settle in and be as nondescript as possible, although he had a difficult time ignoring the constant glances popping at him from all sides of the room. A nubile young woman with chestnut brown hair and brown eyes sauntered to the table with a smirk on her face. Volney saw her approach and immediately pretended to inspect the fireplace to his left. His strangled, uncomfortable demeanor betrayed his feelings for the woman, and Jen grinned.
to see an apprentice to the Dark Guard, a formidable fighter reduced to such squirming, was a pleasant reminder of the person beneath the uniform.
"Welcome to the Quick Blade, Gerund and Volney. Would you like to introduce me to your new companion?"
"He doesn't need an introduction, for pity's sake," Volney grumbled, avoiding her gaze.
"But I do,"
the young woman returned with asperity. Volney's face turned red.
"Lord Blackshear," Jeren said, standing. "This is Gina, the innkeeper's daughter."
Jen stood. "It is a pleasure to make your acquaintance." She stared at the scars on his face. Jen wondered if she heard him at all.
"The pleasure is all mine," she finally said. "Forgive me for staring. It's just that, well..."
"No need to explain," Jen soothed as he returned to his seat. "I know my appearance is a little frightening."
"No, no," she blushed. "It's not that. It's just there are so many stories and descriptions of you. It's hard to believe that one man could do as much as you have. I think everyone just wonders what someone is like who has done such amazing things. You guard the Shalane. You fought a demon."
Out of the corner of his eye, Jen spotted the man who had followed them that day enter. He refused to doff his cloak, choosing to sit alone in a corner across the room. He was horribly conspicuous, and Jen realized the man could not be a professional spy, or if he was extraordinarily bad at it. "I assure you," Jen told Gina, "that I'm quite ordinary."
"If you say so, though I doubt anyone here will quite be convinced of that. What can I get such a fine gentleman today?"
Jen ordered water, while Gerund and Volney ordered ale, Volney speaking so softly that Gina had to prod him to speak up.
"Volney," Jen said after Gina left, "I thought you liked the girl.
I hardly doubt that acting sullen will help you win her affections."
"You don't know what I've been through. What she's said to me," Volney whined. "You have it easy. You don't even have to try to get women to offer their attentions to you anymore. You're up in the castle, swimming in a lake full of beautiful women, begging for you to dive in."
Jeren shot Jen a look that Jen interpreted as, "Drop it." Jen turned his attention to the man in the corner. He hadn't ordered anything, sitting rigidly in his chair, face hidden in a cowl, the dark opening pointed in the direction of Jen's table. Gina returned with the drinks, and as Jen had predicted, people started filling the inn to overflowing. Soon Jen found he could hardly take a sip in between shaking hands and receiving compliments, congratulations on his elevation, and nervous curtsies from every young woman from every household within a comfortable walking distance to the inn.
"I'd better leave," Jen yelled to Gerund above the roar. "This is getting out of hand. Cedric will never want me to return."
"Don't be ridiculous," Gerund yelled back. "He's scraping up more money this evening than he earns in a week."
Jen stood to go anyway, and when he did, the bard launched into another rendition of Jen's song. The patrons stood and danced, swirling around and gradually pushing Jen toward the front of the room. The roar of so many voices and the smell of pipe smoke and beer were overwhelming, and Jen felt uneasy. Days and nights of solitude in the castle had unaccustomed him to such revelry. Jen managed to work his way back to his own table by the end of the last verse. The bard, a plump, puffy man with fine pleated pantaloons and a multicolored shirt and hat, rose from his stool and silenced the crowd.
"I know we're all glad that Lord Blackshear finally graced us with a visit to Cedric's fine establishment that has served as host to many men of renown and great courage through the years. I believe I speak for everyone when I say that we thank him for his service. I think we should have a speech. A few words, Lord Blackshear, if you please."
Jen tried to wave off the opportunity, but the general clamour became so insistent that he felt compelled to say something or risk offending at least 100 people. With some prodding from the bard, Jen stood atop his table and stared into a sea of expectant, anticipatory faces. Jen cleared his throat and searched for something to say.
"Tell us about a demon attack,"
someone yelled before he could squeeze a word out.
"Well," he said, "if you would like."
A general shout of approval was the reply, and Jen launched into the story, feeling grateful for the chance to finally tell it like it was, the demon smashing him several seconds into the whole affair. While he began falteringly, Raphael's training returned to him, and before long, his gesturing, intonation, and vivid descriptions held his audience captive as he puppeted their emotions through the intense story. So enthralled were the patrons that when Jen concluded,
No one spoke, for fear of breaking the spell.
"Well," Jen ended loudly, "it is close to the time for my watch, and I shouldn't keep the Shalane waiting."
The man that had been following him slid out of his booth and walked quickly toward the door as the crowd expressed their disappointment.
"But you got to tell us about killing Cormith."
Another roar of approval. Jen settled them with his hands.
"Some other time, perhaps," he said, "but I have some pressing matters to attend to, such as finding out why that man has been following me around all day."
Jen pointed to the man who was almost to the door. All eyes turned to the stunned figure who yanked the door open and plunged through it.
"Get him!"
someone shouted, and three burly off-duty soldiers bounded out into the night. Jen hopped down and a path was cleared for him, though Jen figured the ingoers mistook his purpose. Rather than run to catch the man, he hoped to keep him from being attacked by his three benefactors. Volney and Gerund came quickly behind, as did half of those in the common room. Outside, the snow was deep and all sounds muffled. It was dark enough that Jen couldn't see the man or the soldiers anymore, and he jogged ahead tentatively, the steep hill in front of the inn making for treacherous running. Most of those pouring from the common room held up just outside the inn, for which Jen was thankful. At the bottom of the hill, the three soldiers were returning, one with a bruised eye and another carrying a ripped blue cloak.
"My lord,"
the one with the cloak said, handing it to Jen,
"he gave us the slip. Headed back in the direction of the castle, we think, though it was very dark in the alley he chose to run through."
"Thank you," Jen said. The cloak was of rich cloth and was finely woven.
"I'm sure it was nothing."
The soldiers bowed and trudged back up the hill. Jen turned to Volney and Gerund.
"I'll see if I can get to the bottom of this," he said. "I'll let you know what I find out, if anything." "We'll walk back with you,"
Gerund offered.
"We'll have to walk quickly," Jen said, "or I'll be late."
The streets were mostly empty as they hiked back. Gerund and Volney split off toward the apprentices' quarters as Jen jogged up the hill toward the castle. Once inside the walls, he entered through the kitchens, Mana greeting him warmly. It took a concentrated effort to keep her from feeding him, and a strong dedication to resist the savory smells and sights around him in favor of being on time. He hurried out of the kitchens before Mana's entreaties and the promise of good food could lessen his opinion of punctuality. A breathless soldier ran to catch him just as he was about to cross the bridge to the Shalane's shard.
"My lord, the First Mother requests you in the Great Hall immediately."
Jen dismissed him, curiosity piqued, and went to the Great Hall where the doors were open. A grumpy-looking First Mother, Aethrys, and Regent Ogbith stood just inside the doors, with a smug Aethon standing with his arms behind his back, face flushed. Jen bowed to the First Mother.
"This had better be good, Padre," Mirel said acidly. "I was with my daughter and do not like to be disturbed."
"This will only take a moment, Highness," Aethon said, small eyes alive with glee.
He walked with a slight limp as he approached Jen.
"So, young man, you are aware, are you not, that as one of the Shalane's protectors, you are not permitted to imbibe liquors, as it will dull your ability to perform your duty adequately?"
"I am."
"And were you not, just minutes ago, at the Quickblade Inn drinking?"
"Indeed I was."
Jen had to try hard not to smile.
"You admit it,"
Aethon crowed, ecstatic.
"I would not have expected you to be so cavalier about your indiscretions. You must be suspended from your duties."
The First Mother, Aethrys, and the Regent wrinkled their brows almost in unison.
"I am sure he did not drink enough to impair himself,"
Mirel argued, making light of the accusation.
"Even a small amount is grounds enough for suspension," Aethon said, "and my reports say he had more than a little. Just how much did you drink, Jen?"
"I believe," Jen said honestly, "that I had 3 full tankards."
"3!" Aethon exclaimed. "There you have it, Mirel. He is clearly unfit."
"I don't see why 3 tankards would incapacitate me," Jen said.
As he had hoped, Padre Aethon eagerly took the bait.
"What? Are you some sort of braggart? Are you going to tell me you can hold your liquor so well that you can drink with impunity? I am sure you are quite familiar with the effects of ale, are you not? This isn't the first time you've gone drinking, I'm sure."
"Certainly. I've been drinking before, but..."
"No excuses, no explanations. You are dismissed."
You are going to dismiss me for taking 3 tankards of water.
Aethon froze.
What? You just admitted you had been drinking.
Mirel, who had gradually appeared more and more distressed, relaxed and grinned.
Well, you have to drink water too, Jen said. Unless someone has come up with a way to eat it. I suppose you could freeze it in weather like this, but is ice really still water, in the traditional sense?
These are outrageous lies, Aethon said. My report said you were drinking ale.
With all due respect, Jen countered, whoever you had follow me was so far on the other side of the common room that he could not possibly hear what I ordered or see what I was drinking. And here is his cloak. The patrons were rather spirited in their pursuit of him this evening.
Aethon turned bright red, ignoring the cloak Jen held out to him.
I would think the church could afford better spies.
Ethrys, Aethon sputtered, give me the truth staff.
Please, Aethon, Ethrys said. This is ridiculous. Don't exacerbate your mistake. Give it to me.
There is nothing to worry about, Ethrys, Jen said.
Give it to him.
Ethrys shrugged and handed the staff to Aethon, who stuck it in Jen's face. Jen grasped the other end.
Were you drinking ale this evening? Aethon demanded, concentrating.
No, Jen replied.
Were you drinking wine this evening?
No.
Beer?
Nope.
Mead?
That's enough, Aethon, Mirel said vehemently, pulling Jen away. You have wasted our time with your stupid little crusade to discredit Jen. You no longer have my attention. Come, Jen, escort me back to my daughter.
Aethon stalked off, mumbling coarsely to himself as Mirel led the Shalane's protector away briskly.
Why did you have to taunt him?
Mirel asked, as they crossed over the bridge and into the antechamber of the Shalane's.
He seemed to be having so much fun I didn't have the heart to stop him right away.
The First Mother laughed, and Jen continued.
And besides, he deserved it.
That he did, Mirel agreed.
You certainly have a penchant for annoying important people.
I hope I haven't offended your grace or the Shalane with my rash behaviour.
I can't speak for the Shalane, but I have, thus far, found your rashness rather entertaining. Though I think we both wish your antics were more conducive to keeping your head on your shoulders. You only offend me by not visiting me enough.
Jen was unsure how to reply to that.
Oh, yes, Mirel said as they entered the maze. I hear there is a song about you burning up the inns in our fair city. Do you know it?
I hear there are several different versions. It changes constantly. I heard one this evening. It is a bit rowdy and more than a little controversial. Your Grace might do well to simply avoid it.
Excellent. I shall have a bard brought in immediately to sing it for me. I must be apprised of all things rowdy and controversial within my borders. I'm sure the House of Regents will demand to hear it as well, if they haven't already.
Jen groaned inwardly. It is a gross exaggeration of my character and my reputation, hardly worth your attention.
I am surprised, Jen, the First Mother teased. I thought you would know my character well enough by now to realize that the more you protest, the more likely I will want to have it played for me.
Jaren bowed as they approached the door. Jen apologized for his tardiness. Jaren, of course, cared little and headed off immediately.
Thank you for the escort, Jen, Mirel said, tapping on the Shalane's door. Let me know if Aethon gives you any more trouble.
Well?
The Shalane asked expectantly. She and Fenner sat in front of the walls, which currently showed Jen standing calmly on guard outside the door.
We could see that Aethon was worked up about something. Did Jen tell you anything about the song they were singing, or the story he told this afternoon that had everyone so enthralled?
Really, Shalane, Mirel said quietly. I think Jen might be a little offended that you and Fenner have been spying on him all afternoon. It is a bit childish, don't you think?
Please, Mother, you of all people shouldn't be lecturing me about spying, especially when you've been spying right along with us. Besides, Fenner is in a fair way to be in love with Jen, and she needs to know what he is like when he is not on duty and in the castle. But you seem to be the one asking all the questions. Fenner has been quite silent. A little perturbed over all the attention he was getting from the young ladies at the inn, Miss Fairdale?
Yes, she exclaimed. Did you see how all the girls mooned at him, and fawned over him, and smiled and flirted? Absolutely disgusting.
You need a bit more confidence in yourself, the Shalane placated. It was plain that he didn't enjoy their attentions at all.
How could he not enjoy it? Fenner said. He's a man. And then there are those letters he never told me about. Kimdan found some of them in Jeren's quarters, absolutely shameful and forward, all of them.
Pout if you must, Mirel said, but I will tell you what happened with Aethon. As for the song, I will have to arrange for the bard at the Quickblade to give us a little private performance.